This is Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg. Coming up, a conversation with Professor Milton Alamadi, author of The Heart of Darkness, How White Writers Created the Racist Image of Africa, and publisher of Black Star News, New York's leading investigatory newspaper from an Afrocentric perspective.
Greetings. Thank you once again for having me on your show.
I want to begin our conversation with, I know that we're going to speak about the role of China, etc., but one of the things that continues to hit me, and that is the U.S. AFRICOM in Africa, which is continuing to exploit and kill Africans. And I want you to comment on that and then take us into the conversation that I know you are most interested in about the role of China, which we very arrogantly and oftentimes raise up as exploitative, etc., and put us on the right track to how we should look at the emergence of as a major power base of China on the continent of Africa. But first, always, let's begin with the reality of U.S. AFRICOM in Africa.
Okay, well, AFRICOM is essentially a continuation of U.S. tentacles expanding and tightening its grip on the African continent. After the Suez crisis in 57, when Britain wanted to reassert its colonial authority. As I'm sure most listeners know, Britain was one of the prime imperial powers once in the world, and particularly in Africa, in the 19th century. So when Egypt, under Nasser, wanted to nationalize the Suez Canal, Britain launched an invasion coordinated with France and with Israel. But the United States did not endorse that. In fact, Eisenhower compelled the British to withdraw. And at that point, it became clear that Britain was no longer a first-class imperial power. So there would be a vacuum in Africa in the post-independence era. And that is where the United States began to assert its tentacles in Africa by first, and of course, we might get into it a little bit later, but I have to include it in part of the narrative now, in the Congo. Congo became one of the first prime victims of U.S. imperialism in Africa. Congo was not allowed to enjoy its independence. When it won its independence from Belgium in 1960 under Patrice Lumumba, the Europeans, the former colonial power in Congo, Belgium, wanted to continue its colonialism, basically redressed as neocolonialism, where Congo would now be formally independent, but essentially still governed based on the dictates and to the profit and advantage of Belgium. But Belgium alone could not have done it, because at that time, the Congo was also under Lumumba exploring a possible relationship, expanding his relationship with what was then the Soviet Union in order to try to protect its newly won independence. The U.S., of course, together with Belgium, undermined Lumumba's government. He was overthrown within 3 months after independence, and he was violently executed in January 1961. So that was the beginning of the U.S. really aggressively exerting its imperial presence in Africa, and primarily It had relied on institutions like the World Bank and the IMF in the post-colonial era in Africa. But that in itself is not sufficient. Africa now guarantees it a military presence, boots on the ground. There's been resistance to that, as most listeners also know. So for the longest time, the headquarters have been in Germany, Africa's headquarters. And any African country that had entertained allowing U.S. physical bases on the ground, this is the one area where African countries were unanimous in rejecting that any of its members consider entertaining U.S. boots on the ground. Many years ago, when Liberia was first looked like it was willing to accommodate U.S. boots on the ground, all the other African countries, led by countries like Nigeria, warned Liberia, said that we will not tolerate. So even though the neocolonial agenda still predominates in most African countries, when it comes to having U.S. boots physically, or at least officially, as part of Africa, on the African continent, there's been unanimous pushback. The U.S. has found a backdoor way by working closely with puppet presidents in African countries like Yoweri Museveni in Uganda to station U.S. troops on the ground. The biggest hoax in recent years was the so-called search for Joseph Kony. Joseph Kony was this relatively small but very destructive militia leader in Uganda, who eventually was driven out of Uganda by 2006. But after 2006, the U.S. actually escalated its military presence in Uganda under the guise of searching for Joseph Kony, who was no longer in Uganda, to increase its troop presence in Uganda and in the Central African Republic. And as we know now, in several other African countries. So the U.S. has at least a few thousand soldiers deployed in various African countries now under the guise of helping to stabilize the politics or to fight terrorism in these countries, but in a way that was the only way the U.S. could have a presence of Africa physically on the ground in African countries. So that's a roundabout way to explain the significance and the importance of Africa. We just have to see it as an extension of the intervention that started in the Congo in 1960.
You know, one of the reasons I mentioned this, I was thinking how wonderful it would be if the U.S. Congress in the next year finally invoked the Venerable War Powers Act to terminate American participation in the war in Yemen and at least six other countries, Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, Pakistan, Somalia, and Syria, and then began to think about this. Meanwhile, without any declarations of war, of course, the U.S. military forces and intelligence agencies that are effectively waging war, killing people, most often by bombings or drone assassinations. And in addition, right, the U.S. AFRICOM, the U.S. African Command, has forces spread all over the African continent in deployments, which are only noticed in the United States when some of the American forces have admitted to having been killed in action, as happened in Niger in 2017. But I guess it was about 2 weeks ago, I noticed, since I get these transmissions, a posting from AFRICOM touting its success over the killing of 62 people in Somalia by four precision airstrikes. So I know that I can count on you to enlighten our audiences to the incredible aggressions and transgressions on the African continent of AFRICOM and the like, and U.S. foreign policies, which I still wanted to use as a precursor to what has become a source of some controversy, which is the discussion of the current focus on China's role in Africa.
Well, before I address the issue of China in Africa, let me briefly just point to what we saw in Libya with the destruction of Libya in 2011 by NATO. And, of course, the aggression led primarily by the United States and by France and by Britain. So at that point, it became obviously clear that individual African countries or African countries collectively are not in a position to resist aggression from the former imperial powers. Just consider the logic behind that intervention briefly. The purported reason was to prevent Gaddafi from, quote-unquote, killing his own people. So what was the solution to that? Let's consider that logic without even rejecting or disputing that, that indeed it was true, that their true intention was to stop Gaddafi from, quote-unquote, killing his own people. So what did they do? Bombing Libya 24/7 for 9 months. Up to today, no one has told us, and no major media outlet has seen it worthwhile to let us know how many Libyans, civilians who were not members of security forces were killed in that NATO bombardment and the destruction of the infrastructure and the buildings. That was a clear case of war crime. Nobody's going to compensate Libya for that destruction. And now, where is Libya today? Libya is a non-existent country. It's been pushed back to the 19th century. And the primary purpose were twofold. Number one, it was to control Libya's oil and make sure the terms were dictated by the Western countries, as it was before Gaddafi seized power in Libya, number one. Number two, it was to embellish Hillary Clinton's resume so that she could then pitch the Libyan success as part of her election narrative. Of course, by the time she ran, Libya was in utter chaos, and she started saying, I had nothing to do with that. I only advised President Barack Obama. The decision was ultimately his. But in fact, it was Hillary and her husband, Bill Clinton, who were pushing aggressively for this war. But of course, she is right. Ultimately, it was the president that made the decision. And it was a disastrous decision that the whole of Africa is still paying the price for it today. Mm. Now, let me move to China. What I particularly resent is the so-called moralistic condemnation of China coming from the Western countries. That China is exploiting Africa. That is true. But the condemnation cannot come from the countries that have destroyed Africa and continue to destroy and exploit Africa. Why should we be so repulsed by China's involvement in Africa when the most dangerous entities disrupting and destroying the continent today, the U.S. military presence, and the role of the World Bank and the IMF. The World Bank and the IMF are purportedly extending loans to develop African countries. That is not true. The only way African countries can become truly independent and use their resources to develop the continent is by industrializing and selling products that are manufactured, products that actually allow African countries to build factories that they control and produce manufactured products that they now buy exclusively from the Western countries. And that is how African countries can really create wealth and prosperity. But the World Bank will never allow that to happen. Most countries that are industrialized today, including Britain, including the United States, including China itself, which is now an emerging power, did so by protecting its domestic industries, by creating tariff walls. And tariff, of course, is another fancy word for taxes that made the manufactured products within those countries much more expensive relative to the ones available from the rest of the world. But they were investing in their future. They're investing in the wealth that all the industrialized countries enjoy today. They needed time to nurture their own industries and build it and then engage in international trade. The World Bank will never allow Africa to do that. And that is the primary purpose of the World Bank, to insist that African countries remain providers of primary unprocessed raw materials to the rest of the world, so that everybody else except Africa benefits. The only difference in China's engagement with Africa, that at least the Chinese are building some infrastructure, major buildings, airports, roads, bridges. So it's slightly better, but it's still not good enough, because China's, in return, what does China get? China gets to extract Africa's minerals and resources just like the West does. The only beef that the West has with China is that China, of course, is not a member of NATO, and China does not coordinate its exploitation of Africa with the West, meaning sooner or later, and preferably to me sooner, African countries can actually start negotiating decent terms with China, whereby China would also transport some of the technology and leave it in Africa, show them how to build their own factories, environmentally conscious way, but be able to produce their own manufactured goods and sell these goods to the rest of the world as well. But so long as Africa remains essentially a plantation, that's what it is, a plantation providing cheap labor to the West and now to China, of course, and providing raw materials to their factories, we will continue seeing the conflicts that we see in Africa, the so-called tribal wars. And I like it when they refer to it as so-called as tribal wars. Of course, it's never a tribal war. It's a war of manipulation in order to gain access to Africa's resources. And the worst case we saw in recent years was the Congo, where the West actually, through Uganda and Rwanda, allowed, tolerated, financed, and enabled a genocidal war against the people of the Congo. And under that guise, use that to extract resources illegally from the Congo. And as we know, the estimates of people that died in the Congo is anywhere from 6 to 7 million people. And that was not because of China. That was because primarily the United States and Britain, and using their puppets Yoweri Museveni in Uganda, and Paul Kagame in Rwanda.
You know,
it's a crime that we rarely talk about. So when I think about all these things, and then I think about the holier-than-thou attitude in the condemnations against China, even though, as I did point out, China is also exploiting Africa. But when condemnation comes from the people that have essentially killed Africa, it's very repulsive and very, very abhorrent.
You know how I long for the kind of narrative against exploitation and for self-determination that was advocated by the Thomas Sankaras and the Patrice Lumumba. Patrice Lumumba, of course, who was killed brutally by Africans who were in the pay of Western interests, or the Kwame Nkrumahs, who were eventually overthrown. Do you, at this juncture, see any light from particular sectors on the continent that are, again, changing or seeking to change the narrative of the neocolonialism via the CIA and the World Bank and the IMF? Are there bright spots amongst the trade union movements in South Africa, the Metal Workers Union or others? And just as a kind of final punctuation for this very insightful and profound discussion that you've been leading us in, I'm just wondering if there are particular bright spots that you see that are towards changing the narration and the actualization of neocolonialism that continues to function on the continent.
The bright spot, of course, the youth of Africa, making up anywhere from 70 to 80% of the population in most African countries. So that is the bright spot. But the youth need guidance as well. The youth of Africa need to be taught to go back and read some history. Because many of the crises that we see today were very well analyzed, actually, by Kwame Nkrumah. And I say this every opportunity I get to say it. In his book, Neocolonialism, The Last Stage of Imperialism. And I highly, highly recommend anybody listening right now to go back, even go online. If you can't order the book, you can download parts of it. And if you only read one part, read the introduction. Nkrumah analyzed and said, after independence, if African countries do not unify or at least come up with united policies of engaging the former imperial powers, the situation will remain the same post-independence. The West will use other African leaders as puppet presidents. And I just mentioned two of them earlier, Kagame and Museveni, to continue intervening in the affairs of African countries that want to pursue a different narrative. And let's not forget, it was Africans who were used to kill and dismember the bodies of Lumumba and Thomas Sankara, whom you mentioned. So I highly recommend that people read this book. Kwame Nkrumah's analysis remains to me the best of the conditions in Africa in the 1965 when he wrote the book, and the conditions today. And in the entire book, he proposes a solution which is the best, which is highly, highly superior to anything that I can actually suggest or propose. So I would like to hand on that, hopefully more encouraging note.
Just speaking with you is always a source of encouragement. And I sincerely hope that we can, certainly in my endeavors, in that we will continue to have you on and to educate, agitate, and help us organize in support of self-determination of the African continent.
I look forward so much for the opportunity, because I find that by the end of every semester, when I engage with young students in my class at John Jay College, by the end of the semester, they have a different consciousness and understanding of the African condition today.
And thanks
to
you.
I really, really look forward to that opportunity.
We're going to make sure our listeners do as well. Thank you again. We've been speaking with Professor.
Thank you once again for having me.
Our pleasure. Milton Alamadi, who is the publisher of Black Star News, which you absolutely should make a regular read. This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.